You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Oh, this is just wrong from the 253. How dare you? Says Maura, the woman probably had lice.
Oh, great.
No.
You can get one of those lice combs and comb through your hair and see if you got little bugs crawling around in there.
Oh, no. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thanks, 253.
I still think Maura should have just like leaned over. When she got into the middle seat, Maura should have been like, okay, I'm going to lay on you now.
Right.
You want to lay over here?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to out-weird you.
Turnabout's fair play.
You're my pillow now.
Or you just start talking to her about really weird stuff that you're doing. You're just like, hey, so me and my family are super into witchcraft and... I actually, in my bag, have 3 newts, 4 frogs, 2 toads, and we're going to make a turtle soup with it all. And you're just like, wait, what? Scare her out of there real
quick. You
want to
see him? You want to see him? Don't tell anybody. Meet me in the bathroom in 5 minutes. We'll concoct a spell.
Yeah.
Oh, I needed your advice yesterday.
Yeah, we could have been very helpful. I mean, Justin and I, we would have been very helpful.
No, I'll be
in this
honest.
Situation.
I avoid confrontation so much. I had so much anxiety hearing the story because I could imagine myself there being like, I know I'm not going to say anything to this crazy person.
Totally, me too. Yeah, I absolutely always avoid confrontation at all points. And so I could totally understand what you were going through.
Totally.
There,
that's so. Yeah. Definitely sounds like you.
Totally. So the first couple months of this baseball season were not ideal. Can we agree?
Yeah.
They were suboptimal. They weren't what we were expecting, they weren't what we wanted. They weren't what it was supposed to be, and it was kind of a bummer. But then over the last couple of weeks, you've seen the team play better, right? They've won a bunch of series. They haven't been perfect, but they've won a bunch of series. Obviously, there was just sort of the disaster of the homestand when you lost 4 out of 5 to the Angels, and it felt like that was just, you know, maybe a death knell. But you found a way to win one of those games, and you found a way to go back on the road, get your mojo back, the sweep, the win in Anaheim, another series win here this week over Baltimore. And now you got 4 with the A's, and all of a sudden you can start to see, I don't know, a light of hope in front of you. And I don't want to get too caught up in it because it is, you know, it's still frustrating where they're at. But when you watch a game like yesterday and you see them hit on all cylinders and you start thinking about it in a different direction, you stop paying attention to how mad you are at the guys who either aren't hitting or are hurt or whatever. And you stop getting mad about the record, which, by the way, they're underperforming their run differential right now. Their run differential is 0, which I think means they should be 500, right? If you're scoring exactly as many runs as you're giving up, I think your record should be 500, and I think they're about 5 games below 500. So, all right, you know, you're underperforming a little bit, which may be some luck kind of coming back around after last year where you were essentially perfect in those one-run games. But okay, you start looking at going, hold on, their pitching, starting pitching, has been incredible for over a month. They snapped a streak when Kirby pitched the other day of, 24 straight games where your starter gave up 3 runs or fewer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in the next 2 games? Starter gave up 3 runs or fewer. So in, what does that make it? 24, 25, 26. 26 of 27 games, your starter's given up 3 runs or fewer. That is excellent starting pitching. Excellent starting pitching. And it's not like you got a bunch of 37-year-old starters that are on their last legs. Right? Who's the veteran of the group? Ray and Marco? Neither of those guys are that old. I mean, you're talking about Kirby and Logan Gilbert. Flexen's still not an old guy. I mean, you're talking about young players, right? So that part, I think, is incredibly worth noting. Then you start thinking about your bullpen. Well, as bad as it looked a couple of weeks ago, it's turned it around. Sewald seems to have found it again. He was filthy, by the way, the other day against Baltimore in that close game, the 2-0 game. I did not Larry Salk rule it. I decided to watch the ninth. And Sewald was as good as I've ever seen him. I thought he was nasty in that game. Obviously, what Castillo has done, Diego Castillo's turned it around. You're getting something out of Penn Murphy. Now, all of a sudden, you got Ken Giles.
Yeah,
right?
You DFA'd Sergio.
Right? Like, things all of a sudden look a little bit better. You don't have to watch Misevich, who was a disaster this year. Steckenrider got sent back down. By the way, Matt Brash has been tearing it up in Tacoma the last few outings, really for the last couple of weeks. Maybe he is on his way back sooner rather than later. So, yeah, I you can start looking at that and saying, all right, your pitching all of a sudden is good. Then you start thinking about the core, right? We talked about this fairly recently. Julio Rodriguez is turning himself into one of the best players in baseball. He really is.
Not one of the best rookies, one of the best players in baseball.
It really is remarkable. Justin, you were showing me that chart earlier. And what is it? It's WRC plus, which is weighted runs created on one side and strikeout percentage on the other. And they've just basically reversed since the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Aaron Goldsmith tweeted out the picture of the graph.
Yeah. And it's an X, basically, right? Yeah. I mean, like, it's an X. At the beginning of the year, he was striking out a lot and not creating a lot of runs. Now, he is creating runs at an elite level and not striking out nearly as much. It's, for his age, at 21 years old, I'm going to talk about age in baseball a little bit later because I'm going down this afternoon to Tacoma. I'm going to go talk to Jared Kelnick, and we'll have that interview for you guys tomorrow. That's been set up. Hopefully, I'll get to see Matt Brash while we're down there and kind of check in with him and see what he's up to. But yeah, I'm going to go down and record an interview with Kelnick today, which we'll run tomorrow. And he is 22. Julio's 21.
Yep.
You start thinking about, you know, guys on the team and their age, like Cal Raleigh's 25.
That's crazy.
Right?
Is he really?
Yeah.
That young?
Yeah, but that's 3 years older than Jared Kelnick, 4 years older than Julio.
He doesn't have the same baby face, I guess, is why.
Well, it's because he's so sad looking. He's always so sad. He just looks like he's gonna cry. But you know, Julio's so young, and to be doing what he's doing at that age, those are the marks of legitimate superstar level players. And so, okay, consider this core all of a sudden when everyone's around. Julio, superstar potential. France, one of the better pure hitters in Major League Baseball when healthy. JP, excellent defensive shortstop, leadership, and streaky hitter, right? Winker, if he's the guy he's supposed to be again and he can get back to that 900 OPS thing, you're talking about an excellent hitter. He has not been that over the course of the year, but to go from where he is to Major League average, which is about where he's at right now in terms of his OPS, shows you what he's capable of during the last stretch, last couple of weeks. Raleigh, is he a great player? I don't think so. But is Cal Raleigh a good, solid catcher in a league where catchers are scarce, to say the least? He sure has looked like it over the course of the last month. It's in there. He's going to have to show it over time consistently. But he's at least shown that it's possible that he has that skill set, right? And then, obviously, the pitching with Gilbert and Kirby. I'm talking about a young core. Every guy I just mentioned is 25 or younger, except for Winker, I think, is 26.
I think Winker, yeah, 26 or 27. And Marco and Robbie, by the way, are 30.
Yeah. You're not talking about an old team. 30 is starting to come out of your prime. Generally, pitcher's prime is 27 to 31. So you're talking about all guys that are either below their prime or just coming into it.
Jesse Winker, 28.
So that's your core.
Yep.
That's the nucleus of this team. And so when you see Julio do his thing like he did yesterday, and you see him put a ball into the upper deck in left center field, and it was not a hot day. I'm not talking about 95 degrees, middle of summer, ball carrying, etc. Ask Jesse Winker how well the ball's carrying right now. I mean, yeah. Julio just unloaded on that pitch and just destroyed it to left center field.
I felt bad for Winker there, too. He wanted to watch that one go.
Oh, man. Oh, you mean the game winner from the other night?
He took like six or seven steps, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, that one's not going to go. I better get on my horse and start running a second base. Yep. So it can be exciting. It can be. I know it's been frustrating, and there's no guarantee that all those guys are going to be, you know, the players they need to be. And even if they are, they still probably need more in order to be elite. But at least you can kind of remember and start to sense what this thing was built to do. And then you get Haniger back. And then you get Kyle Lewis back. And all of the things can start to come. And maybe Matt Brash comes up from AAA. And maybe eventually Jared Kelnick, who we'll talk about a little bit later, becomes the Jared Kelnick he's supposed to be. And all of a sudden, you're cooking with gas. And it's a completely different situation than it felt like in the first couple of months of this year. So maybe I'm being excessively hopeful today. It's just in my nature. The same way I don't like confrontation.
It's true.
What can I tell you? All right. Let's see. Tonight is Thursday, right? Mariners taking on the A's, 7:10. It's Pride Night. Mariners proud to support the LGBTQ plus community with Mariners Pride hats. First 10,000 fans will get them. You can get tickets at mariners.com/promotions. We'll come right back, give you everything you need to know. And then Maura, thank you. I have to say thank you. You introduced me to something yesterday in an email that I think is going to become required viewing in my life. We'll do that at 7:30. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, don't look now, but honestly, maybe you should. The Mariners have won 7 of 10 games. They've gotten themselves back to within 5.5 of the final wild card spot. Remember, there's an extra third wild card this year. They're now tied with the Angels. Their run differential's exactly at zero, meaning they've scored as many runs as they've given up on the season. So, yeah, that comes courtesy of a resounding 9-3 victory over Baltimore yesterday. Had a little bit of everything, right? Bunt base hits, swinging bunt base hits, balls bouncing off bases, and of course, one absolutely mammoth blast.
Best be ready, and the 2-1 pitch. DeJulio, swing and a well-hit ball. Deep to left center field. Going and going in. A bird deck. Goodbye, baseball. Holy smokes, and a mile by Julio Rodriguez with his 12th home run of the season.
So let's be clear. That was such a long home run that Rick had to break out not only a holy smokes, but he threw in a my oh my just for good measure. Rick doesn't bring that out unless he needs to. He doesn't overuse a Dave call. He's bringing that out for the big moments. A holy smokes and a my oh my. And I think it was probably worth it. That ball was tattooed. This kid is really, really remarkable. And Scott Servais was marveling at him after the game.
Julio Rodriguez, it's it is. We got a lot of fun ahead of us here. I think the whole organization, Seattle fan base, everything. This guy is some kind of special. We're watching it play out before our eyes. And you know, that's a long ways to hit a home run in this ballpark. You don't see it too often. He's been right on everything all series.
Special's a very good word for him, and he continues to show that he's going to be one of the great ones. Chris Flexen went 6 in the game. Sam Haggerty showed that getting on base and pressuring the opponent can be done without always hitting the ball over 100 miles an hour. And then Jesse Winker just continues to hit. 2 more base hits yesterday. He's now raised his OPS to 696. Which puts him within striking distance of decent major league numbers for the year. Honestly, the average OPS in baseball this year anyway is 706. So he is almost a league average hitter despite all of the struggles he had for, 2 months or so? Anyone want to bet he finishes pretty far north of 706 in average? I'm betting he does. Anyway, Oakland in town for 4 starting tonight. Another chance to make some hay against a team that's on pace to lose well over 100 games. Logan Gilbert, Adrian Martinez, who's making his second start in the majors in the opener. Roster moves before the game yesterday. Taylor Trammell, unfortunately, going to the IL. Team brought up Haggerty and Marcus Wilson, who made his major league debut and walked. They send Kevin Padlo back to Tacoma.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, day 3 of the Deshaun Watson hearings in front of former federal judge Sue Robinson. Some really interesting news leaking out, though. So the AP had a report suggesting the league might accept a suspension in the range of 6 to 8 games rather than appeal anything that is under the full year, which is what they requested. Well, the headline certainly looks bad for the league and for Goodell because, 6 to 8 games for this crime doesn't seem right. So let's try to understand the process a little bit. Goodell's got the ultimate say. So if either side appeals, if Watson's camp appeals the decision from the independent arbiter or if the NFL appeals it, guess who decides? Roger Goodell. And his voice is essentially that of God. The only way he cannot have final say like that is if she decides that there should be no suspension, that nothing is warranted. And so I guess the idea is if you leak something that you would accept a smaller number than what you asked for, she'll at least give you something so that you don't then have to go through the, appeal thing. Anyway, my personal opinion is this. Goodell's trying to make the hardliners like me happier. He's trying to say, look, you're not going to get the 2 years that you want, but hey, it's a lot better than 6 to 8. Look at how Roger Goodell stepped in and tried to, double the suspension all the way up to 1 year. It makes it look like he's doing the right thing, and by setting the expectation level a whole lot lower, I think it's kind of weak.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Anyone know what you're doing on October 3rd and whether or not you're interested in watching an NBA preseason game here in Seattle, Climate Pledge Arena? The Blazers and Clippers are going to be there, so you can if you want. Three thoughts. One, it's nice for fans. It is. It's another reminder that the NBA will return as soon as it's ready to expand. It's also a little sad. It just sort of bums me out because this is supposed to be the real city, and Portland's like not quite a satellite city, but like
a little brother.
Yeah, we're bigger than you. You shouldn't get to send your team up here for an exhibition. We send our team to you. The Seahawks should do an exhibition in Portland. The Blazers don't do an exhibition here.
Yeah.
It's just not quite
right. It's
kind
of like how the Kraken went around preseason playing in Spokane,
yes,
Tri-Cities, and Everett.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right. Anyway, one other story, weird story, by the way, if you want to follow this. Legal action, theme of the week. So this one involves Freddie Freeman, the first baseman, his agent, Casey Close, and then Doug Gottlieb. Freeman fired his agent just this last week after he left Atlanta in the offseason to go to L.A., It sounds like after a series back in Atlanta last week, he got a little upset, and there have been rumors that the agent, Casey Close, overplayed his leverage with the Braves, and eventually they were like, yeah, whatever, we're moving on, and they traded for Matt Olson. At that point, there was no room for Freeman, so he ends up going to L.A., where he gets a higher salary but actually less money because a lot of it was deferred and you get all the taxes in California. So he's upset. Well, Doug Gottlieb tweets yesterday that the agent never showed the final best offer to Freeman. And now Close is threatening legal action against Doug Gottlieb. So, weird story.
Ugh. Yeah, I would be so upset if I was a fan. If that happened to your favorite player,
Super
if you just
mad.
Won the World Series,
yep,
and like you want him to come back for that season, oh, I'd be upset as a fan.
It's Allen Eagleson. Remember we were talking about Bobby Orr and how he got taken out of Boston by a jerk agent named Allen Eagleson? Kind of the same thing. So, anyway, Casey Close is going to sue Doug Gottlieb, so we'll see what happens.
Okay.
That's everything you need to know. You know, I know Doug is polarizing, but I like Doug because, you know, I used to fill in for him all the time, and he was gracious enough to let me do like a third of his shows in a season. He paid for a house of mine. I mean, like, thank you, Doug. I don't mean to say I have like many, many houses.
Wow.
I didn't mean it like that.
One of my many homes.
One of my palatial estates.
I wouldn't have my beach house if it wasn't for Doug Gottlieb.
No, what I meant to say is the house we bought in Seattle basically was, you know, thanks to Doug. So I owe Doug Gottlieb a little bit. I'm very thankful for him not doing his show very much.
The truth comes out.
He used to come on his show and be with me when I was hosting. He'd like come on as a guest. He's like, hey, it's Doug Gottlieb here in the Mike Salk Show, filling in for Doug Gottlieb. It's like, yeah, it's kind of how it turned into at some point. All right. I do have many houses. Many homes.
With a wall with wine cellars.
Hey, it smells of rich mahogany.
You want me to, I'll tell
you.
Oh,
you're not a Will Ferrell fan. That's from Anchorman.
Leather-bound books.
I like Will Ferrell. I'm not obsessed with Will Ferrell. I'm not anti-Will Ferrell.
You didn't like SNL Will Ferrell, is that right?
Right.
But you like Will Ferrell outside
of it. I think he's fine. He's just hit or miss for
me.
How's that?
Okay.
I like him at times, but I'm not in like the Will Ferrell's the greatest comedian of all time camp. That's all.
I don't think anybody's saying that.
I think a lot of people are, quite frankly.
Greatest comedian of all time?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you. I just didn't know if you knew what I was saying.
I did.
Okay.
I think it's not like he's not in the he's not in the Jim Carrey camp or anything like that.
Okay.
All right, coming up next, Maura, I'm going to say thank you because you introduced me to something that's going to become a significant part of my life, I think, over the next year, so I'm looking forward to that. Plus, since we were talking about all of my many homes, I'll tell you a story about how I profited off Brock Heward. All of that to come. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Thank you, Maura. I appreciate it. You did something nice for me.
I mean, I feel like I just did my job. I found some content.
Well, this week, at least. I mean, you didn't do it last week, so it's nice of you.
True.
Just kidding. So it was great to have you back. Maura's been gone for the last week visiting some family back east, and she's been regaling us with stories throughout the morning of cool golden retrievers and kids and haddock. Ponds and haddock and scrod and other food that you can only
Steemas.
Find in the Northeast.
Steemas and lobster.
People
Steemas.
Who add R's to the ends of words and drop R's in the middle of words,
my aunt
et cetera.
Kept offering us Coroners.
Coroners.
People know they take the R's out of things, right. But a lot of people don't know they add them to things that end in
right.
A.
Soda. Replace them in places where they don't go.
Yes. Okay. Yep. No, that's pretty well how it goes back in the Northeast. So, no, it's been good. But also, you emailed us something last night that I was not aware of. So the Seahawks are doing something called Sound of the Seahawks, right? So this is on Seahawks.com. I'll give them a little promotion, and for good reason. It's awesome. It's essentially, based on the first two episodes, it looks sort of like almost like their own version of a Hard Knocks, I guess you would say, right? The episode they're going to be once a week. They're like 20 minutes long. I don't know if it's going to go into all of the sort of personality, you know, storyline stuff that you get with Hard Knocks.
The hidden camera kind of in the
right,
office.
I don't know if it's going to be all that, but... it seems to be essentially a lot of really cool behind the scenes footage on video with some, like, you know, confessional style interviews with them as well. And so you sent over some stuff from the second one, and I ended up watching the whole thing this morning because I was pretty fascinated by it. And this really focused on Clint Hurt, right, and the defense and kind of where they were going during OTAs and minicamps. And they've got great footage of Clint Hurt in the defensive team meetings, talking to the guys. There's some great sound of Pete Carroll talking about just how much he loves Clint Hurt and what a unique person he is and how his size and his voice and his presence really makes him sort of a commanding figure. And so it really is worth your time. And I'm guessing this is going to be part of my regular viewing habits now. You'll probably have to remind me about it every week because I always forget about things like this. But please do, because I really thought it was well done and great.
But it's once a week is what you're saying.
Yes, and not just because they used my voice at the beginning of it. But anyway, sorry. Sorry, did that come out?
You didn't know.
I was just channeling JC for a minute. Anyway, so I want to play you some sound from Pete and specifically from Clint Hurt. Because I think that as we talk about this season, this may not be the most hope we've ever had for a Seahawks season, but it might be the most fascinating in terms of Pete Carroll in particular and the changes that Pete seems to be willing to make, especially on defense, where he is going out of his comfort zone. What's Pete's number one thing? Don't get beat deep, right? Don't get beat deep. If I know two things about Pete Carroll and his philosophy on defense, it's all about the ball and don't get beat deep, right? Well, listen to Clint Hurt explaining just how aggressive he wants these guys to be.
You see a player, you know that player is yours, all right, right here. Go take the shot. Go take the shot, because if you don't do it out there on the practice field, are you going to do it on Sundays? I mean, you can bet you won't, because you won't have the confidence in yourself to go do it. No coach in this room, if you take that shot in practice, they complete that ball, I'm not going to rip you because they got a completion. I'm going to be pissed off if you don't go take an opportunity to go see if you can go get it your damn self.
Well, that seems like a change in philosophy. Now, maybe Pete would show up here, and if he were sitting next to me, he would go, no, Mike, no, that's not it. No, we've always wanted guys to be aggressive and go after the ball, so it's not that big a difference. I'm sure that's what he would say if he were here. So I will present the other side of the argument. Pete, if you're listening, if your friends are listening, there you go. I know that's what you would say. But it sure sounds different to me. The idea of I'm not going to yell at you if it gets completed over your head. I'm going to yell at you if you don't go after the ball and try to make a play, even if there's risk on the other side. That sounds different to me. Now, maybe it's just for the corners and the safeties still have to be more careful. But it sure looked like he was addressing everybody when he was having that conversation. So that's a major philosophical shift. Again, I'm sure Pete, if you were here, would say it's not. But I think it is.
Well,
because I'm going to argue with the coach about his own philosophy.
There's another cut you'll get to, though. And to me, it's interesting because it's Carroll talking to the defense. So it's not like he's talking to the media.
Yep.
He's explaining to them the difference in their defense
here,
this year.
I'll play it for you.
He kind of confirms that there is a difference.
There you go.
And what we have done in the biggest way is we have found our ways to make our stuff fit the guys that we have in our secondary. And the coverage stuff that we're doing that's smart and aggressive and physical and on attack, it features the guys that know how to play the way we want to play. You guys know it. I know you can feel it. I know you understand it. This needs to come to light. They're not going to know what we're playing or when we're playing it.
I mean, it sure sounds like he wants it to be different. It is new. It is different from what they've done. And I don't know how many times we're going to use the word aggressive this year, but probably a lot. I know you got, I'm already expecting the text, 206-421-3776. Salk, did you just learn the word aggressive and now it's the only word that comes out of your mouth when you're talking about the Seahawks? Yeah, I know it's coming.
The text came with a lisp?
The text always does. Yeah, it's okay. The old texter voice. I haven't used that one in a while. Falk, I don't know why you always say aggressive. Always been aggressive. You just learned this word and found it out last minute, Falk. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, that's angry texter voice. I haven't used it in a while, mostly because I forgot about it. But yes, that's that sort of angry texter voice. I got it last week or a few weeks ago. I was talking about how Robbie Ray had the two-seamer, I think, and it has a little bit more arm side run. Oh, Salk, just learn the phrase arm side run. Now say it over and over again. Yeah, all right. Calm down over there. Sheesh. Anyway, you're talking about a very big change for a coach that has been accused of not being willing to make big changes. And I will submit to you once again that that's not the case. And that for the last couple of years, I think Pete's wanted to make more changes. And I think that he was caught in between, which is never a good place to be. I think he was caught between his desire to make changes and his loyalty to some people around him that were not up for those changes and not capable of being the ones to change. And when you hear, you know, we've gone through this in great detail, right? All of the issues with Ken Norton, all of the problems from, you know, not using young guys to not being aggressive to guys not understanding their assignment to the stuff. We went through it all. That I think Pete has wanted to make some of these changes for quite some time, but at the same time was really, really stuck with his loyalty to a longtime friend and confidant in Ken Norton Jr., who I don't know was up for making some of those changes. Well, you listen to Clint Hurt, he is. What a commanding presence, right? And you marry that with what sure seems to be an incredible understanding and mind for the game. And then you bring in a couple of other guys that seem to have that as well in Carl Scott and Sean Desai. And Pete explains why it was so important to get this whole group together.
But to get Sean to come in with Carl at the same time, that had such similar backgrounds and processing and learning their football, and that coincided with Clint also. That was a big deal. I wanted a really high level of communication between the staff, not a bunch of hotshots from their own places, and we'd have to try to figure it out how to bring it together. We didn't have that much time.
So there you go. Well, you know, I'll be following this a lot throughout the year, and I'm sure you'll hear me use the word aggressive way too many times, but I think for good reason. I think it's going to be very important. Salk, did you just learn the word aggressive? See, there you go. We've always been aggressive. You did you just learn that word? Yes, I did. Sorry. A lot of people worried that other people are going to have to use this mic after me. Don't worry. I use my own mic flag.
I was thinking about
now,
that.
No, I got my own mic. What do you call this thing? Mic screen. This black thing that sits on top of the microphone. I can take it off if you're watching on if you're watching on the stream, you can see it there. There's
the filter.
The mic filter, and then there's the mic underneath.
Or the spit catcher, if you will.
Well, maybe there's some spit when you decide to go down that road. So, hey, so Brock's going to join us in a couple of minutes. And I brought this question to him yesterday. I'll throw it out to you guys. Just to see, you know, what you would have done. I told you I may have profited off of Brock and his kindness. So 8 years ago, roughly, 2014, I moved back here to Seattle. And I moved into my house where I live now in Green Lake.
Uh-huh.
And Brock was kind enough to give me an old lawnmower of his that he wasn't using anymore. He had had it in Suncadia and he didn't need it. And so he gave it to me.
Which he had it in Suncadia.
In his house. One of his many houses.
One of his many
houses. One of his many palatial estates. Yes. And he brought it over to my house, said, here you go, because I had never had a yard before. I'd always lived in apartments, right? And it was my first, or a townhouse. And this is the first time in my life As an adult, I had had a yard, and so I needed to mow it. I'd never mowed a lawn before. Yes, I know. People give me grief about this all the time.
That's incredible.
I never had to mow lawns as a kid. But we just I didn't do that. What can I tell you?
I've never mowed a lawn. I don't plan on it.
You had to shovel snow, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Plenty
okay.
of snow. Okay. Yes. I did plenty of other things. I just didn't, you know, mow the lawn. Anyway, so Brock gives me this lawnmower. It's a Craftsman lawnmower. It's like a 21-inch. And I've used it to mow my lawn since then. During that time, Justin, I have never washed it. I've never cleaned it. I've never given it any form of maintenance, surface sharpening. I've never oiled it. The only thing I've done in 8 years is fill it up with gas. And once, when the bag broke, I bought a new bag and put it on.
Okay.
Other than emptying the bag of grass when the clippings are done, I've never done a thing to this lawnmower.
Well, to be fair, lawnmowers are pretty maintenance-free these days. So was it a new lawnmower?
No.
When he gave it to you?
No, it was a used lawnmower when he gave it to me.
But I mean, new, modern. It wasn't one that he had since
the 80s.
I mean, it
wasn't from the 60s or something, but, like, you know, it's just a lawnmower.
And it's not pre-mixed. You just put pump gas in it.
Just put gas into it, right. So I did nothing to this lawnmower, by the way, proving once again that all of that stuff they ask you to do is completely made up. Oil changes, all of it, complete garbage.
No. Your yard
is like, what, the size of four tents?
Well, so that's the point. So we did this work in our home recently, and now my yard is even smaller, so I really don't even need this big a lawnmower. And I wanted to get an electric lawnmower, right? Because it's smaller, lighter, et cetera.
Don't go buy gas.
Don't have to go buy gas. Right, and probably more than anything, the lawnmower I have is kind of heavy, and it was kind of digging into the grass when I was turning it and stuff. So I just wanted a smaller lawnmower.
Okay.
So I bought an electric lawnmower, and then I realized I still have this old lawnmower. Well,
who did you pass it on to?
Well, I thought I'd put it up on one of the other sites.
Offer up,
and see if somebody wanted to pay us for the lawnmower.
You were gifted a lawnmower, and you didn't pay it forward and gift it to someone else?
I didn't know anybody else who wanted a lawnmower.
Yet?
So I wasn't going to keep it around for all that time. You know me. I want stuff out of my house. So I sold the lawnmower for $100.
Oh, my God.
Were you honest about the lack of maintenance that went into it?
I didn't say anything. The guy didn't ask me. He said, does it start? I said, yeah. I said, let me see. I started it. He was like, yeah, I'll take it. I said, great. $100. Here you go. So he gave me $520.
So Brock gave you a $100 bill.
So I asked Brock, you know, I was wondering whether or not I needed to pay Brock anything for it. Howdy said no. He said Brock's rich and rich people don't matter. That was literally Howdy's comment, although he denies it. That's exactly what he said. Brock said he didn't care, that I was doing him a favor by taking it off his hands. So there you go. That was my story about whether or not I owed Brock any money. In fact, let's talk to the big man himself.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a brainwash.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Michael.
I was just telling the story of your lawnmower that became my lawnmower, now is somebody else's lawnmower.
Yeah. I told that story last night, too.
Yeah, what did your family think? Did they think I owed you money?
Absolutely not.
You know, good.
Macy, Titus, Molly, all kind of chuckled.
Poor Brock, though, told me when I was telling him the story, he thought I was gonna have to pay money to dispose of it, and that I was gonna ask him for the $50 to bring it to the dump.
Yes. Well, you did give it to me, and I took it off your hands for 8 years.
Right.
But now that I got to get rid of it, you think like
$30
we could
go to
split
the dump?
It? I mean, can we split the dump fee?
Oh man, I don't think I would have had that in me to ask for something like that. But hey, we've been talking about. Well, I was talking about a keyword, Brock, that I think is going to be overused, certainly by me, over the course of the Seahawks season as we talk about their defense in particular. And that word is aggressive. Do you believe that the Seahawks will truly look different on defense this year and that they will be more aggressive?
I don't know to your eye if that will jump out as much as you think it will. Because when you think of aggressive in the NFL, you think of the Rex Ryan teams and all these blitz looks and people coming from everywhere. And well, who was it? Matt Hasselbeck that told us the Pittsburgh Steelers are like Star Wars, right? This three down, crazy. And it's very hard to figure them out. I have a hard time imagining as sound as Pete Carroll likes to be defensively. I mean, that's the essence of everything that he knows in football for 50 years. you know, from Monty Kiffin and the two deep into a single high three deep shell is a you've got to beat us. You've got to earn it. We're not just going to give you. And that's why I think both him and Bill Belichick, frankly, those two, Nick Saban probably be a third. Those guys are all aligned in that way. They all come from a secondary background, looking at the game from the back, you know, to the line of scrimmage. And when you do that, you do want to protect against the big play. I mean, so I have a hard time thinking that, you know, just the average football fan who doesn't look at all the 11-on-11, doesn't know every call, is going to look at them and go, wow, these guys have changed so much. For those of us that know the difference, you know, and have just seen it enough times between what they used to play in their zone coverage versus their match coverage versus their route recognition versus, you know, jumping routes and matching routes and understanding that, it will look different. It should look vastly different on the back end of it.
All right, so let me play you some sound. This is from Clint Hurt. I played this a few minutes ago. He was talking to... this is in a team meeting a couple of weeks ago, and this is the Seahawks have this new thing they're doing called the Sound of the Seahawks, which is like a 20-minute behind-the-scenes show every week on Seahawks.
Which would have been a lot of fun when Richard and Marshawn and those guys
were not
going to do that then.
No. Anyway, listen to Clint Hurt, and then I'll ask you a question about it.
You see a play, you know that play is yours, right here. Go take the shot. Go take the shot, because if you don't do it out there on the practice field, are you going to do it on Sundays? You can bet you won't, because you won't have the confidence in yourself to go do it. No coach in this room. If you take that shot in practice, they complete that ball, I'm not going to rip you because they got a completion. I'm going to be pissed off if you don't go take an opportunity to go see if you can go get it your damn self.
Okay, so by the way, Clint Hurt's awesome, and listening to him talk is just great, and he's commanding presence and all that. But how many times will we see a cornerback take a shot to try to get the ball, miss, have it get completed and go for a long play with somebody getting beaten deep before Pete loses his mind and says, I'm sorry, we can't do this. Will he actually be able to handle that? Risk reward?
I think that's a fair question to Pete in about 3 weeks when you're there at training camp, or if he hops on before you, because I think it will be the most challenging for him. These other guys, this is what they're versed in. This is the way that Clint Hurt is wired. He is the opposite. He's not a guy that looks at the game from the back end, secondary-wise, to the line of scrimmage. He's a guy that looks at it from the line of scrimmage. That's what he played. That's what he is. It's what he's coached, what he's known. But when you bring in, you know, the people that you have, and Joseph and Desai, that's what you've asked those guys to do and to implement, is to go for it, right? Is to be aggressive. We're not just going to sit back here and just, you know, have the only thing be stay on top. Trey, you're doing a good job. Stay on top, even though you're giving up every completion in front of you and they're, you know, as efficient as can be. No. You know, we would sure love for you to still limit the big play. And you know what? Maybe Quandre Diggs, 25 yards deep, and he's going to be the last line of defense time and again, because we want you guys to go after it. That's what he's speaking about, that route. Okay, if you know it's curl flat, if you know it's slant flat, if you know when they get in a bunch or they get in trips or they get in these formations and we've studied it and you know what's coming, go for it. Go pull the trigger on it. Don't be satisfied with, well, I stayed over the top, didn't give up the big play, I made the tackle, it was only a first down, wasn't a touchdown. We're not satisfied with that anymore. Go get the football. And I guess that is probably what cuts through, right, as we talk through this, because Pete has been about the ball. That's what he was at USC. That's what it was the first 7 years of this program, right? It's still, footballs are still attached to the wall in that facility, and those guys, defense players, do come in and hit the football when they come in, and it's all about the ball is still a premise. Now it's just, you know, I think a little shift in that mindset, defensively, coverage-wise, to go get it done.
Did you see Julio's home run yesterday?
Yeah, he's going to be a 30-for-30 guy this year, isn't he?
It sure seems like he's got an opportunity to be. I mean, he's definitely going to get there stealing bases, right? What is he at?
Yes.
What is he at now? 17 or something like that?
He's at 12.
More than that. 12 home
knocks.
Runs.
I know, he's at 12 knocks, and we're just about the halfway point numbers-wise. So, and we've seen that just grow. He's one guy, Mike, when you've told me, you know, you age. What is it with power? You learn power?
You learn power.
Yeah.
You sort of learn it as you get older. Just learn it. Yeah.
Well, he's learned it in from April to May and May to June, and that continues. He's going to be a 30-for-30 guy this rookie year, which would just, and stay healthy, and then just be phenomenal.
He's special, and Scott talked about it after the game yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the whole game yesterday. It was just so interesting seeing them do a bunch of little things differently to win a game, right? Mm-hmm. Laying down a bunt, swinging bunt, you know, little dinky hits without exit velocity from Haggerty, who that seems to be maybe it's a part of his game, running around the bases, pressuring the opponent. It was pretty to watch.
It sure was. So who do you have enough sample size now, 80-some games, to look at Julio? And who does he look like someone? Does that swing remind you of someone? Does the way he attacks a ball through the zone is a hitter, does he remind you of anybody you've seen in baseball in the last 25, 35 years?
No. Mm-mm. Not really. Honestly, he's pretty unique between the height and the speed and the bat and the swing and the power, all of it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've got a really good comp for Julio. I'll tell you one thing, because I can't think of a good answer to your question. Uh-huh. I'll change the question. I won't accept the premise of your question and just change it.
Yeah.
watching him in person, he takes unbelievable routes to fly balls.
Mm.
His ability to sprint to the spot where the ball's coming and then stand there waiting for it is as good as I can remember seeing, certainly for a player of his age.
It's pretty good.
It's tremendous.
Certainly something this team has needed for a long time. Yeah. Had it for decades. I mean, it was Griffey and Mike Cameron were phenomenal at that. So that also has been a void that he's filled. He's filled that void of a young superstar actually matching, maybe even exceeding expectations in pretty remarkable ways. He's just a big dude too, man. I mean, look at him 2 years ago, right? I think when we saw him at spring training and he was, you know, a tall guy. Gosh, I guess 6'3", but he was wiry. Mm-hmm. Now he is just...
He's filled out.
He is filling in some grown man strength. Mm-hmm. That was a grown man home run again. He hits it to all fields. I'm kind of curious if that text toy has somebody that he looks like. Yeah. I comped Ty France earlier this year a little bit to Edgar. Different stance, and Ty's a little funny before the swing, and his hands are a little lower. But just as far as I think his approach and somewhat of his swing, I do see some Edgar. With Julio, I'm kind of struggling to be like,
gosh. I don't have a good answer. With Ty France, I kind of comped him a little bit to George Brett. I thought there was something there.
Yeah,
and actually, it's funny, Jerry came on and made a similar comp, so I felt really good about that. I'll keep thinking. I'll talk to Jerry at 8:30 this morning. Maybe he's got one, but the more I watch him, I don't have one. Maybe he's the person we're going to be comping others to.
Somebody texted in Adam Jones for Julio.
I don't see that. I mean, no, I don't see that personally, but I like
Buxton.
He's so much bigger than Byron Buxton. Yeah. No, I don't know that I can say that either.
Grown into that and filled out over time. But
Buxton's not a big guy like that, though.
No, he's twitchy.
Bunch of texts coming in, though, Brock. The revised lawnmower trade code of Washington dictates beneficiary Mike must make a token purchase for Granter Brock. For example, a golf round or send a DoorDash couple dozen Krispy Kreme to his home directly. So that was one option. Another says, I fix and sell mowers as a side gig. Uh-huh. Unless it was like new, you rip that guy off. LOL. Also, Howdy's 100% correct about Brock. And then finally, Brian says, somebody out there has Brock Heward's lawnmower and they don't know it? That's like having Eddie Van Halen's nose hair trimmer. So people are very excited, Brock.
That's good. Good. And got some chuckles at the dinner table last night as
good
well.
Good to hear. So, all right. Okay. We'll talk later. See you, buddy. New Brock and Salk podcast is out, and you can go find that at brockandsalkpodcast.com. All right. As I said, Jerry DePoto is going to join us in about a half hour at 8:30 this morning. For all of the talk about Julio, every time we mention his name, I can't help but think about somebody else. It's not someone he reminds me of, but it's somebody he makes me think of. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.